Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. My guest today is Professor Michael Gratizar, and he's been researching sleep since 1998 and treating insomnia and circadian rhythm disorders since 2002. He developed the Wink Sleep Online conference so that his novel treatments could be used by anyone on the planet. Now, that's a little bit of his background, and I will be attending the online Wink Sleep Conference. Looking forward to it. Definitely encourage you all to join in. And he aims to do this on a regular basis, so certainly checking out his site and being sure to sign up for his weekly newsletters can all make a big difference to ensuring that you're in this conversation. He puts out lots of quality content, so I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation as we get into it on today's podcast. Now, before we get into the podcast, I do want to take a quick minute to give a shout out to our sponsor, BetterHelp, or as I like to call it, a therapist in your pocket. It's the exact app that I used when I was going through my really challenging period of insomnia while traveling overseas. And the ability to maintain a consistent therapist in real life was just really not an option for me since we were jumping around from country to country. So the ability to, with using my phone, have video calls weekly with my therapist, I was paired with I connected with a great therapist right off the bat, but I do know other people who have been able to kind of shop around with some of the therapists on that app until they find a great fit for them. And in between those calls, one of the things that I found was really helpful is that you can also send voice notes, text messages, images in between that, you know, longer weekly video call so that you do have this really very real ongoing connection and support that I certainly, at least in my experience, hadn't felt with real life therapists that I had used in the past. And also the pricing structure is much more competitive than a lot of the real life therapists that you can come into contact with. So I found it to be a lot of benefits. I recommend it to a lot of people that are just kind of going through struggles in their life or just simply want to be able to up level and bring in that level of reflection and awareness into their life about what's both working and not working. And you can certainly cancel at any time. And for our sleepy community, the BetterHelp company has hooked us up with 10% off. If you go to betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill, again, betterhelp.com/sleepisaskill. And welcome to the Sleep is a Skill podcast. Really excited to dive in with my guest today. Michael, thank you so much for being here.
And thanks for inviting me. It's good to talk to you.
Oh, you too. Now, I know you bring with you just a breadth of knowledge in this area around sleep optimization. So there's so much that we could dive into. And yet a couple, you know, pieces of focus for us or areas for focus in this conversation anyway, is one, understanding a bit more about the conference that you are, you know, the creator of and leading. And two, looking at this conversation around tech and sleep. So to begin, would love if you can share just a little bit about your background and how you came to be such an expert in this area.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things when you sort of get into it early and you've been doing it for long enough, you sort of eventually you sort of think maybe I'm an expert. So just for the listeners, I started working in the area of sleep in 1998. So the 1990s when, you know, music was good. And I guess it got to a point where it was just like, you know, I was foraging around and learning so much about sleep. And then I was like, well, you know, maybe I need to do my own sort of stuff, because I guess what was happening is that, you know, I am from Adelaide, Australia, and definitely being able to help people in my home state. But it really got to a point that I had the knowledge to be able to help other people. And clearly, you know, being able to sort of be on the internet, there were ways to try to do that. And I think it's through the university that I was working at, we were trying to do, like, say, for example, an app, but that sort of really just didn't progress, you know. And I was thinking, well, maybe I just got to do this myself. And I guess that's where it leads to the website that I started up, which is winksleep.online. And part of that was thinking, well, I've been to so many different conferences And that's the thing. And this is why I'm glad that, you know, we're having this chat, because we're sort of been in these different bubbles. Like scientists go to these sleep conferences, we see each other, and we're not really translating it to the people out there in a direct sort of way. And I guess what I've noticed is that my research is not really getting through to the public. And, you know, we'll talk about that a bit when we sort of talk about technology use in sleep. So I thought, well, why don't I just do my own conference and, you know, try to sort of make it directly to the people. So yeah, we've got the Wink Sleep Conference. It's coming up on July 10th. And you'll be there as well.
Yes, and, very excited.
Yeah, and it's been really interesting because it's not lots of sleep scientists coming along. It's a lot of people from a whole variety of backgrounds. And I think that's really good because it's a way to sort of directly get the scientific findings and these new findings directly to people from different sort of areas that are working, you know, with sleep optimization.
Well, one, I just so acknowledge you for, you know, not only your commitment in this area, but then really translating that in a way that's helping to reach more and more people that might normally not, you know, be coming across some of this information, such high value information, more readily. So I really appreciate that. And so, yeah, I think that actually could be a great point, what you made of who is attending this conference. And so what types of people, would it make sense for them to attend something like this? What would this look like? What can they expect when joining?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we've got the details on our website. So we've got a tab there for conference. So people can definitely go in there. They can see who's going to be presenting and what the topics are. We've got a conference flyer that they can download and get more information there as well. But I guess when we look at different conferences, they'll come up with a theme. And sometimes I'll sort of see these different conferences and go, there's similar people, but just the theme's different. So what's really going on here? Are we trying to just collect the big guns? And one thing that I love when I go to conferences is that you've got the talks, you've got the big speakers and all those sorts of things, but then you've got these things called poster sessions where people, their sort of research didn't make it to the big sort of stage. They can't sort of talk to people and get that great exposure. And usually they're sort of PhD students and early career researchers. And I love just sort of just going around and having a look at them. They stand in front of their posters that really just summarizes their research. But you can have these really in-depth conversations. And in some ways, I feel very sorry for them because they're sort of standing there hoping someone's going to come along and talk to them and that their research means something. But I've really found that there's like these nuggets, like you can actually find some great research there. And it's really sort of fantastic to have those talks. So the theme of my conference is really focusing on those up-and-coming researchers. So hence the theme is called The Next Generation. And I've really worked with all of these speakers. So we've got 12 speakers from around the world. And I just want to sort of get not only the sort of research that's coming out that's really novel, but it has some sort of real-world application. So it means something in the real world. Because sometimes you'll sort of go to a conference and you'll hear the talk, fantastic for our scientific knowledge, but what does it mean for a person? And so hence why this was an opportunity to sort of go, here's some really cool research and what are the implications? How does it really help people? So when people look at it, they'll see all these different sorts of topics. But in terms of themes, we've got really a theme on sleep and mental health. So, for example, sleep and depression is something that we've been looking at with our own research and others have been looking at their research as well. And it's not just really the connection between the two, but what happens when you provide a treatment like CBT for insomnia? You know, what does that do to depression symptoms? Or, you know, if you've got teenagers that have a delayed circadian rhythm or body clock, you provide something like light therapy, what happens to their depression symptoms? And we've got, you know, a theme of technology use and sleep. So along with that, really, we're looking at some of these talks looking at big data, what we call big data. So in other words, when you've got these sort of consumer devices or you're able to sort of get in the background and be able to scrape data. And so we're having a look at the different sorts of circadian rhythm patterns of video gamers from different countries and around the world. We've got one talk that's looking at the interaction between mothers and babies and what sort of interventions parents are most likely to use with their infants in a natural sort of setting. You know, they get bombarded with so many different sort of ways of helping their infants, but what are they actually trying? What do they find useful and so forth? And there's also a focus about how we do interventions, not just for the individual, but also if you're going into schools and you're trying to sort of help teenagers. So, for example, time management in the evening, what sort of effect does that have? And furthermore, even when it comes to mental health services. So, for instance, mental health services, as you can imagine, especially after the last year, there's a huge wait for trying to get in and seeing someone. And so there's this application or this potential for actually doing sleep therapy while these kids waiting on a wait list. And what does that do, for example, for their depression symptoms? So we're really trying to cover a whole range of different types of ways that sleep can really help us, regardless if you're a sort of a parent, adult, teenager, or anything like that, whether you work in an organization that's a government or you're in private practice or something like that. So hopefully something for someone really is our aim for that.
Wow. Okay. So a number of things are being covered in this conference. And so my assumption then is that this could really be for anyone that's looking to go deeper into this topic of sleep, understanding it more. And if they're having challenges with their sleep, the commitment is that they can walk away with some practical takeaways, but that are really grounded in research that they can delve into further and bring into their own life, if that's accurate.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so hopefully, you know, for those people that really sort of think, okay, I want to sort of learn more so I can help my own people that I'm helping, that's really what we're trying to aim for.
Amazing. Okay. That's awesome. And I'm loving what you're sharing too about all of these different implications and the effects of this, you know, quite a long list of the elements under, I love the sleep and mental health connection, and then the gaming element. That was a cool one as well. So what would this look like for people so they can join in and then learn more throughout the course of this conference? And then are there ways for them to work with anyone through Wink, or are there aspects for them if they're really struggling with their sleep and then want to get more guidance from people that they respect and that are really trained in this area?
Yeah, great questions there, really. So what it's going to look like is that obviously we have to do this online. We've got speakers from, you know, around the world. We're going to try to do it live, but we've got a backup that we will have the recordings. And so for each speaker, they're going to be doing like a 15-minute presentation, and then there'll be 5 minutes for question time, and that'll be live as well. So the idea will be that people can sort of, in the chat, it'll be a Zoom chat, that they can ask their questions, and I'll be basically chairing each of those sessions, and I'll be able to ask the presenter, we've got a question here about blah, blah, blah. And so they'll be able to do that. And we don't want people to be up, you know, for 12 hours or completely during the night. So obviously these [S2] Right. [S1] Are going to be recorded as well. So people will have access to those for 12 months, those recordings, so they can always go back to it. So if they're sort of thinking, oh, you know, I've just seen a client and I remember there was something about this in one of those talks, they can go back to that. So that's hopefully handy. And I guess the other thing was that, and I sort of am a little bit playful, but when I used to go to some of these conferences, I used to love going to all those sort of sponsors and just sort of seeing if I could nick one of those, you know, pens or post-its. You know, when you're a PhD student, you know, free shit's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we've got some sponsors, and the sponsors have been able to provide a prize, a door prize, basically. So people that also come along for the conference, we're going to randomly pick some of these people to receive a prize. So we've got Nanette, for example, who from the US, and they've got a Nanette camera and floor stand. So this is really useful for, you know, if you have a baby or an infant of your own, or you know someone else, or even if you want to do research in this area, you know, it can be a handy sort of a tool. Somnox as well, who provided the sleep robot. I think you might have even...
Yeah. It's actually sitting over here.
There you go. So you know what it's like.
Yeah.
So they're providing one of the sleep robots, Chili Pad as well. And I think it's going to be useful for you guys in the Northern Hemisphere, because we're going into our winter.
Yes.
So the whole idea is that this goes onto the mattress. So they provided me with one to try out. And the whole idea is that it really tries to just cool the person down directly. So we've got one of those. And we've also got some sleep hemp tea from Hemp Oz Australia, and also copies of my book called Helping Your Child with Sleep Problems. So this is really for parents who have a school-age kid who has a sleep problem, and really just like a self-help manual for parents to sort of know what to do. So hopefully there's a lot for everybody there, and there's different ways that they'll be able to learn new things that can help them and their clients.
Wow, that's a lot. That's amazing. What's been your experience with the Chili Pad or the Uller?
Yes. The first time I had it, I thought, oh my God, this reminds me of the sensation of me wetting myself, but I don't feel warm, you know. But then you sort of get used to that. And definitely over our summers in Australia, you know, we can get damn hot here. It was really helpful. It wasn't noisy as what I was expecting and saw some of the reviews for. But I've sort of seen as I get older, I get warmer. And this is just like a great way to do it. And my PhD was in sleep and insomnia and thermoregulation. So I totally get the science behind it and why you would want to directly cool the person down and make their sort of environment around them cooler. So it helps to really sort of dissipate the heat from their body as well. So yeah. So you've got one as well?
Yes, yes. And I had been hesitant for quite some time because I was, you know, my fiance and I had been digital nomads for about 3 years. So we were traveling internationally and we're, you know, backpack carry on. So tracking sleep in different locations and obviously, you know, packing an Uller or what have you is a little challenging. So I had purposely not gone that route for quite some time. And then the pandemic happened. So then I, you know, was grounded for a longer period of time and did test it out. And in alignment with that traveling pension, I definitely now am hooked. I can certainly say, like, I actually have some traveling coming up, and I swear I am literally strategizing, like, could I send an Uller there? Like, it's just ridiculous. So yeah, big fan of those options for cooling mattress pads. You know, some people lean into 8 mattress or at least certainly in America, and the new Bright beds for some of the, you know, 5-star hotels to have even more up-leveled options. But yeah, we'll certainly be seeing more of that for sure. So, but it's great to hear your feedback on that. And going deeper into this topic of sleep and technology, would love to hear more about your expertise. I mean, I know this is a big topic and you've got a lot of knowledge, and yet, what are some of the things that you're seeing that are frameworks that are important to think about sleep and technology, you know, just kind of giving you a little bit of the floor on that topic.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for that. And I'll probably at this point even get your listeners to sort of think about almost like what are some of the facts that they know about sleep and technology? Like, you know, what are the things that come to mind? What are the do's and don'ts? I mean, even if you want to sort of throw a do and don't at me, just to sort of give that sort of start off and that impression about what people are learning about sleep and technology.
Yeah, well, okay. So for one, a number of people will be curious of their sleep is not working. That's a big category. And yet, where do they begin? They want to make some investments on, you know, going in deeper on tech. Where do they start? Where is it worth investing? And where is it, you know, just not going to really yield a high return? And certainly I was at the CES right before the pandemic, and the sleep tech area was insane. And I'm sure you've, you know, seen just, I mean, it's of course ridiculous, this area that you could invest so much money into. So how to make sense of what really, from your background and all your training and understanding of what really makes the difference in sleep. Now, I know this is a big topic because it's a big area, but what are some of, you know, a framework for people to be thinking about so that they're investing wisely?
Yeah. And I'll probably, you know, put a twist on it because really, you know, rather than sort of go sort of big and what sort of big sort of types of sleep tech that they can get to improve their sleep, it's more like, okay, what do they already have access to that might actually be helpful for sleep? And so we'll see what this, you know, journey provides. But definitely our research has really been looking in the last 10 years at what is this effect of technology use, you know, what we already have on sleep. And so that's, I guess, the value of being able to be someone who is a researcher. You're independent and you get to sort of choose what you want to do. And so one time I thought, yeah, I'd love to do a theme of just looking at how does, say, video games, how does the video games affect sleep? And back then, you know, when I got my job in 2005, there was only one really good, experimental study, and it was in Japan. And they gave Japanese young people either mental arithmetic to do in the evening or play a violent video game. And in both situations, they only took about 2 or 3 minutes to fall asleep after doing that. But the issue was that it had a fatal flaw in this study, because instead of them going and doing this sort of activity in the hour before bed, like we always hear, it was more like putting them to bed like 3 hours later. And as you would know, if you're staying up 3 hours later, you're going to be incredibly sleepy. You're going to fall asleep regardless of what you do.
Yeah.
So we really didn't have an answer about what was going on. So I thought, okay, well, let's do a study. Let's get some teenagers into our sleep laboratory and we'll feed them pizza and then we'll get them into their bedroom and then, okay, here you go, here's Call of Duty 4. This is going back quite some time.
Yeah.
So they either did that on one night or they came back and they would watch March of the Penguins, you know, that documentary about penguins.
Yes.
And I think it's that's interesting enough. If people want to find out how to fall asleep, watch that, because we had a third of the teenagers fall asleep while watching that for an hour. And I think it's got something to do with Morgan Freeman probably narrating. He's got that sort of voice, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, the results surprised us because the time taken to fall asleep, and we measure with EEG, so, you know, a quite accurate way of them trying to fall asleep. It only took 4 minutes longer to fall asleep after playing Call of Duty compared to watching March of the Penguins. So that really surprised us. And it really got me going, oh, okay, what's going on here? And then I guess we went back to the drawing board and went, okay, well, people and teenagers don't really do an hour of gaming before bed. They'll probably play for many hours. So let's just up the dose. You know, let's give them a dose of, say, 50 minutes before bed and 150 minutes before bed. So we did that. Again, measured EEG after we gave them pizza and their video game, a new violent video game. And again, it only took a few minutes longer to fall asleep after playing 150 minutes of this video game. And I should sort of say around this time, we were sort of trying to work out also what was the mechanism linking technology use in the evening and sleep. And for those two studies, we were trying to, we had this idea that it's quite alerting, you know, you've got this arousal. And so we were measuring heart rate to see if that was going to pick up anything. And we weren't finding that heart rate was really increasing or anything like this. I mean, furthermore, we couldn't see that there was an effect on the time taken to fall asleep. So we went, okay, well, maybe this isn't the mechanism. Maybe it's all of this stuff that people are saying about the bright light from the screens. And sort of just to sort of give a bit of background, we've been doing bright light therapy for circadian rhythms for a decade before that. So we know that it can be effective in changing circadian rhythms. So we thought, okay, let's have a look at the scientific literature. And we were really surprised. So this is in 2012. That there was not one single scientific study that had tested whether having a bright screen in your face for an hour before bed affected your sleep. They had tested whether it affected melatonin, but not necessarily measured sleep. So we were the first group to be able to measure that. And so, we got teenagers in, you know, lots of pizza with a lot of these studies. Yes. You've got to sort of bring them in.
Lull them in, yeah.
Exactly. And so what we did is that we gave them a bright iPad in their face for an hour before their usual bedtime. On another night, it was completely dim. And on another night, and keeping in mind this is back in 2012, so Apple hadn't invented their night shift mode. So we had to jailbreak these iPads to be able to put on F.Lux, which Michael Herf and Lorna Herf had invented. So, and they were really cool because they were sort of involved and we were consulting with them when it came to performing the study. So anyway, we compare the sort of bright screen versus the dim screen. The difference in the time taken to fall asleep was a few minutes. So it was less than 20 minutes in all of these different sort of conditions. And we're going, okay, so now it's not the bright screen. What the heck is going on here? And I guess with all of these studies, we were doing what one would think you should do, which is to really make sure that we have the person go to bed at their usual bedtime and provide all this stimulation just before bedtime. The idea being that that rolls over and people have difficulty falling asleep. And we thought, well, maybe that's not what it is. And we know that another mechanism is this idea of sleep displacement. So the idea is that we just continue playing or doing something and then we're pushing sleep away. So we thought, all right, well, let's just do something different. We'll bring in teenagers, feed them pizza, get them into their bedroom and go, here you go, here's a brand new video game, go for it, you know, see what happens. And we thought, okay, if we do that, how are we going to be able to tell the reason why some of them play for ages and some of them turn it off at the right sort of time? So we went back into the scientific literature and we were trying to explore anything at that point that might sort of basically explain this. And so there were a few variables that we were looking at, and one of them was basically risk-taking. So the idea being that you've got these rewards that you're chasing, which sounds very much like what happens with video games and so forth. And then you've also got the consequences of taking risks. So that's exactly what we did. We got these teenagers in. We managed to try to sort of give them all of these different questionnaires. 2 weeks later, they came into the sleep lab. We gave them this game, crunched all of the data, And what it showed was that it wasn't the reward chasing, it was actually the consequences of taking risks. So people have to sort of keep in mind, we're giving them a questionnaire that's not talking about the consequences of not getting enough sleep. It's the consequences of all of these other sorts of behaviors. And then 2 weeks later, we have a camera in their room just watching when they're going to turn off the video game. And these things were related. And so what it was suggesting is that the less that teenagers cared about the consequences of taking risks, the more likely they were to keep playing video games. So, you know, the flip side of that is if you care about the consequences of your behaviors, you're more likely to have that sort of self-control. And, you know, these teenagers that really didn't care about what the consequences were of risk taking, they would play until 1 o'clock in the morning, and they fully were told beforehand, we're going to wake you up at 7 o'clock in the morning and take you to school, because these were done on school nights. Mm. So for the first time, we really were finding something where technology use could affect sleep, but it wasn't the sort of usual ways people were thinking about this. So we then went on a little bit of a journey to sort of explore what is it about people that might sort of explain this. We also work with teenagers and we also work with adults and so forth for so long. And we keep hearing stories, say, for instance, from parents about, you know, I'll say, you've got 5 minutes, you've got to turn it off. And they'll say, yep. And then 10 minutes later, the parents will come in and say, all right, time to get off. And they said, you didn't give me a warning. And they'll say, yeah, I did. And then you go, okay, so what's happening is people are just getting into a zone. And there is scientific literature behind this. And the concept is called flow. Mm. The whole idea is that you get into an activity and you're just totally in a zone. You lose track of time. You're totally immersed. Now, people can get it knitting. They can get it like reading a book, but people can also get it playing a video game. So we thought we'd try to measure that. To cut a long story short, you know, skip all the pizza sort of stuff. It was flow that really did predict, like if they were higher on this ability to get into a flow state, they would turn the video game off like an hour and a half later, like well past midnight, compared to those teenagers that were lower in flow. But that particular study, that's when we started to learn something that was a bit odd, which was that in order to stay in flow, what you need to do is the task has to be not boring and it has to be not too challenging. So you're in this sort of nice sort of zone. And so the idea was that we wanted to see, you know, is there something helpful that we can do here? Can we actually manipulate flow? You know, can we bore them to sleep? And so we thought, yeah, we'll try to do that. We'll try to find a video game. We'll just have it on normal difficulty on one night, just have it on boring difficulty on another night. And we struggled to find a video game where we could manually manipulate the difficulty. And we thought, what's going on here? This is so odd. And what we found out is that there was artificial intelligence now embedded in video games that game developers were doing. And it was called dynamic game balancing. And so you don't have to worry about manipulating your difficulty level. They'll do it for you. And the whole idea is this is supposed to be a really cool thing. You don't have to worry about it. But the problem is that now game developers were understanding the psychology behind people's behaviors, understanding flow and wanting their users to be able to continue using their product. So we were starting to see that there was this interaction between what game developers were purposely doing and technically vulnerable people. Fast forward now to that Netflix documentary. I don't know if you've seen it, The Social Dilemma.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And when I read that, when I watched that, yeah, it was like, yes, exactly. This is exactly what we found when we were doing our video game study, that there is this manipulation, but there are certain people that are vulnerable to it. And the whole idea is that they will just continue using whatever product it is, whether it's going to be YouTube, Facebook, video games, and so forth. So I guess over this 10 years of research, we're really sort of seeing that those concepts of this being a very stimulating type of thing isn't necessarily explaining why people are using technology and it might affect their sleep. It's not the bright screen. Even the last month or two, someone did test Apple's iPhone night shift mode. The difference in the time taken to fall asleep, whether you use that or not, was like 30 seconds. It's not working, doesn't do anything. So people have this myth that it's this blue light that's coming from screens, and it's just, you'll see it anywhere. Like, you know, spend a week and looking around for sleep and you'll find that sort of stuff. But the research is not actually getting to the people. Hence why, you know, we want to sort of do these sort of conferences and try to get the science directly to people. So really now to sort of answer your question, which I know it's taken quite some time, but
no, this is great.
What we're finding now is that combined with our clinical experience, where what happens is the parents are sort of saying to teenagers, no more technology use in the hour before bed and no technology in your bedroom. And so what happens is that the teenagers go to bed and they've got nothing and they've just got thoughts. And that's what seems to happen, is that if you don't have something to distract you, you're just going to automatically have these thoughts will pop into your head because there's no visual stimulation, there's no auditory stimulation, and people are just having these background thoughts coming to the forefront of their head. And we know that from insomnia, that if you've got these sorts of things, and this is what we hear from teenagers, it's what we've heard from adults, is that you start to plan and you start to worry about what's going to happen the next day or what you've got to do. You reflect on your day and how crap something was, and maybe you're interpreting it a different way this time. And then you start to catastrophize about your sleep as well. And this is exactly what was happening. So again, we went back to the scientific literature, and there were just a couple of studies that were just missed in some sort of ways. And if you put them together, it was telling a bit of a story, which was, if you look and ask teenagers, what do you use as a sleep aid, something to help you fall asleep, then they were saying watching TV or reading a book, listening to music, being on their phone, etc. And this was a study that was done back in 2006 that this was done, and it was completely missed. And then you look at another study, I think it came out in 2014, and they were following people up over time, and they were seeing whether they were developing a sleep problem and whether they were changing their technology use. And what was happening is that it wasn't the fact that people were increasing their technology use and then developing a sleep problem. It was the other way around. They were developing a sleep problem and then their technology use was increasing. And that matched our clinical experience. It was basically, we were seeing in clinics sometimes that teenagers were saying, well, if I'm going to take hours to fall asleep, I may as well be doing something. So we then did a study a couple of years ago, and we asked teenagers, do you use technology use to distract yourself from worries? And we found that at least 62% of them said at least sometimes. And now that we're starting to get some of that information out at conferences and so forth, what we're also hearing from other people, say, for example, in South Korea, is that teenagers are using technology use, social media. YouTube is the biggest one that comes up, that they're using that in order to calm themselves down and distract themselves from not only worry, but also from negative feelings and thoughts. So people have been told for so long, don't use technology in the hour before bed, don't use bright screens. Now, I wouldn't necessarily advise using video games up until the point that you're going to fall asleep. I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, don't have a fully bright screen in front of your face. Definitely try to destimulate as you approach sleep. But think about what you're using and try to make sure that you go to your natural bedtime, your natural sleep time. If you know what that is, be aware of that and make sure that you're trying to fall asleep around that sort of time. But potentially you can watch TV in bed. You can listen to music in bed. You can read in bed. So yeah. The 1970s sort of thing from, you know, Dick Boots and saying that you only use the bed for sleep and sex, it sounds like, no, you can actually watch TV. You can do these sort of pleasant activities that not only will distract you from all of these worries that you've got on, but it could help your entry in getting into sleep. So that's my long-winded answer.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So much was just said there. And I so appreciate all of that. Actually, I just did a IG Live Sleep Spotlight earlier today and with the author of War on Sleep. And he was speaking to his own penchant for watching TV before bed and how it really works for him. And I think there's so much to be explored about some of these hard and fast rules that had been kind of out there. And often, or not often, but there are times when it seems to be providing more and more more anxiety for people of now trying to get it right. And I can't have this in here. For people that know my story, part of my interest in this area is that I had gone through my own period of insomnia. And certainly part of my thing is a good girl element to my way of being and trying to get it right. And so I would try to get it right with, okay, so I'm going to do this strategy. And it was like, I was going into battle for bed, you know? And so that can just be a particular challenge for people that are dealing with that way of being and some other folks. So I appreciate you really, you know, the stringency by which you are experimenting and then seeing, wow, okay, this is defying what we would think. And so let's go deeper, the why of this. And I was curious if you could just quickly define a little bit for people newer to this concept of flow state and how do you measure that? Is that more esoteric or is there that physiological response? And then what can we do to start to notice, are we going into that state? How to modulate that? A little bit more about that.
Yeah. So in our experiment, what we did, and people obviously keep in mind that you can't sort of necessarily do this to this sort of level, but we certainly would measure people's perception of their flow state. So we have to make sure that we find certain questionnaires that have stood up to scientific testing. So that's one way that we find out about their flow state. Maybe, and I'm not sure if people can really access their own data in this sort of way, but we also measured heart rate. So heart rate will also show you flow state. If you're in flow state, you're quite calm. You know, things are going quite well. But if you start to get bored or you're super challenged, what we found is that after about 150 minutes, so this is beyond one of our earlier studies, around that sort of time when people were bored enough, that's when we started to see heart rate start to get out of that flow state and it actually started to increase. And so people are, I guess, being more aware that, this is not working for me. And it was interesting that this increase in heart rate was meaning that's when they were going to actually try to go to bed and stop the video game. So I think for people, it's really being more aware of you're doing that. I mean, we tried to sort of snap these people out of the flow state by having on one night just the video screen there to be able to play. On a second night, we had a clock right below. And we weren't telling them that we were doing this or anything like that, but it made no difference. So unfortunately, even having a clock there in front of you won't do it. But one thing that did happen is that when we were trying to measure their own perception of their flow state during this whole time of video gaming, we did have a speaker and we would ask them a certain question and 1 out of 10. And it really was interesting because it did snap them out of that flow state. So we couldn't measure flow state that way, but it was snapping them out of it. So people can probably think about, again, I need to go to bed roughly around this time. I've got to be careful I don't get trapped by flow. Maybe I need to set a couple of alarms ahead of time before I engage in my activity so I don't get trapped. I mean, people reading a book, most people will be fine, but there's some people that will read until 3 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah.
Because they're just absolutely engrossed. It's some sort of method that you could use to sort of externally sort of snap you out of it, even if it's a, you know, a bed partner or someone else like that, that can just sort of say it's this sort of time. So you're just aware of it as well. So maybe that's hopefully a practical tip for people to use.
Oh, that's great. Absolutely. We do have some people listening that, you know, lean into the gadget side of things. And so things like the LIEF, L-I-E-F, so kind of like that continuous monitor, but for HRV and heart rate, you know, starting to notice certain interesting trends. Even for myself, I would see certain, you know, Netflix shows that I would think would just be nice and relaxing. Nope. Turns out for me, I'm getting stressed. I'm getting whatever. And really engrossed in the family is now there's the divorce and now I'm getting buzzed because my HRV is dropping or whatever. You know, it's just so fascinating. And how I think some of these pieces of tech are interesting because it's, we actually did a podcast with LIEF and they had made the argument that we're notoriously challenged at our ability to spot when we're going into some of these states, whether it's a stress response state or otherwise, certainly this flow state. So the possibilities of what could come about from a behavioral perspective where, you know, being more attuned to these pieces of data. So really, really interesting. Okay. So this is an element of what some of your findings have been in this area of sleep and certainly more to come. So more to come, meaning that if they were to attend the sleep conference, which I absolutely recommend anyone listening that you do that. And this is an annual conference too, right? So if they're listening later on, they can join next year's presumably.
Yeah, well, I'm making this up as I go, to be honest. Okay. So I was thinking, you know,
right, am I a conference? Okay, yeah. So it might evolve, it might take different shape, but certainly checking out that offering because it's exciting. I will certainly be there at this one, looking forward to more. And one of the things that we've seen on this podcast is that people are really interested in what people are doing in this world of sleep. So they want to know, well, what are these people doing? So for you, and I'm sure this evolves, but for you, where are you at right now on our first question, which is what does your nightly sleep routine look like?
Yeah, it's not the best.
yes.
And I'll say that because it's interesting once you get in the area of sleep, you reflect back. And I remember being put to bed now as a kid and just lying there awake for an hour or so, you know, but that was just normal. I'd hear my parents, you know, at the other end of the house listening to TV. I could actually hear the whole TV show and all that sort of stuff. So I think I've always had that with me. And so it does take me a long time to fall asleep. But certainly now, you know, I'm an academic, so I've got lots of responsibilities and lots of things going on there. So, you know, spinning a lot of plates and, you know, a few of them are crashing now and again. But
yes.
After that, you know, just trying to also build up Wink, you know, doing that after hours and trying to sort of spend a bit of time on that. But I've quite fortunately got two fantastic family members. Obviously, my wife is, you know, sort of saying, what time are we going to try to, you know, start to watch our shows? And then I've also got a pug who, I don't know, for some reason, I seem to be his sleeping tablet. So I'll be at the computer and he'll then suddenly come and sit down next to me and I'll feel a nudge and he's looking at me with those chocolate brown eyes. I'm like, oh, okay, yes, that's really hard to say no to that sort of stuff. So they protect me from flow, I'd probably have to say. And after that, yeah, certainly we go and we watch our shows and that's our sort of way to sort of wind down at the end of the night. And we happen to be watching a Danish show, so The Killing, you know, the old series.
Oh, interesting. I haven't seen that.
Yeah, we watched the American version, which is fantastic, but it's really interesting. When you don't understand Danish, you have to read the show. You have to know what's going on.
Yes.
And so many times I've noticed this, and this is why I certainly do recommend, you know, watching shows or TV, is that sometimes I'll say to my clients, you know, you can just have the volume down a bit low, have the brightness down a bit low, and you might get to that point where you don't want to keep watching it, but you'll listen to it. So go with that. And yeah. I don't tell them what happens afterwards, but they will inevitably say a week later, you know what, I'd shut my eyes and I thought I'll listen to it. And then before I know it, I'm asleep. And so this is what happens. But, you know, when it's Danish, you miss out on a lot of stuff. So
yes.
That's our nightly routine at the moment.
That's amazing. Okay, good. And I really do, again, appreciate, too, you being someone so in this arena for so long and kind of providing a new way of looking at this topic of television. You know, what does a nightly routine consist of? And it doesn't necessarily have to be this like perfect. I always say that to, you know, in this conversation too, around, you know, light stretching, yoga, music, like this whole lofty thing of what it should look like, or some of these ideas that we might get of what we think a perfect nightly routine should look like, and actually really leaning into what you're sharing can be really, really relaxing and ritualistic. And yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so that's your nightly sleep routine. And what would we see on your nightstand, or that could also be your, you know, proverbial nightstand, or any items that we might want to be aware of, or ambiance, kind of any call outs for you that are important in your wind down routine in the evenings?
Yeah, I would say that, I mean, I came from a, you know, sleep and thermoregulation background. So I guess I'm always aware of the temperature, I'd have
yes.
to say. You know, as strange as that sounds, it's not necessarily, well, I guess you can use objects. We've already talked about the chili pad.
Yeah.
But certainly over the summertime, I was really making sure that, you know, the air temperature was really cool. So that was going to help us try to fall asleep, because you're basically that transition from the heat from your body to the cooler air, that's going to be something quite helpful. And if you're too hot, that's going to make it difficult to fall asleep.
Yeah.
Now that we're coming into wintertime, I can't really put my foot up to the screen right now. I'm not that flexible. But, you know, having just some good socks and knowing when to sort of put those on and when to take them off. A call out to, I think they're called Dashmayan. Sounds like it, if you were to say it in English, it looks like Dags Mayjan, who have developed some comfortable sleepwear. So I got to wear that for the first time last night, and it's insanely comfortable. I don't want to take it off. I'm wearing it right now, actually, but I'm not going to show you.
Nice.
But and I think what I was really impressed with these guys with was that they consulted thermoregulation scientists, sleep scientists, textile scientists, and then they knew what to do, and then they set about making their garments and their pajamas. So for me, I'd say temperature is an important thing, but if I did not have a device to watch something with, I would be left there with my thoughts, and I would have to make sure that I put effort into just enjoying that time. You know, it doesn't have to be negative. You can actually just think about good things that have happened, or just even like goals and fantasy sort of dreams that you want to sort of achieve. You know, you can actually sort of twist that around and make more of a positive association.
Love that. Okay. And just because of your background, I'm curious your thoughts on things like mouth taping or any of those practices, if you have any, if you lean into that, or if you, for you, it's not, doesn't really make the difference.
I'm a definite mouth breather. I would not sleep if I did that. So I don't really, I've actually questioned some people sort of in the sleep apnea area, like, okay, you're probably wanting to strap my mouth up to know that if I have to breathe through my nose, I'm going to have a CPAP. I'm not going for that sales pitch. I know what you're doing. The tech companies are doing it, and now you're doing it. So for me, nothing like that.
Okay.
No. I think once you get into sort of like the CBT sort of stuff, you understand thoughts and behaviors, you know how powerful the behaviors can be.
Sure.
In our physiology. Yeah. I think that's the sort of key thing there.
Absolutely. Great. Okay. And so then the last one would be, what has been one of the biggest changes to your sleep game, or biggest aha moment for your individual results with your sleep?
Strangely, TV in the bed, I'd have to say.
Love it.
We had, back before we had all these streaming services, we had a massive TV, like the old CRT ones, the big blocky ones in our bedroom. And I think not only does it help to distract yourself from your thoughts, but it's just a nice, it's making a positive association with bedtime. It's not this negative, fearful battleground or anything like that. And for me, I've been saying, you can have a TV in the bedroom like for over a decade, and people, even, some people that I work with say, you shouldn't be saying that. But now, fortunately, we've got the data, and I can say, science says you can do it. So I'd have to say that one.
Nice. I'm sure a lot of people will be very happy to hear that one. And actually, normally I wouldn't ask this question, but I feel like just from your immersion in this area, curious if you have any recommended books for people to delve in deeper on the topic of sleep, or things that you think are really kind of a seminal work or flagship books that people should go in deeper on, or shouldn't go into on, or that you don't that you don't like as much, either one.
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't get to read, sleep books. I have read some of them. I'm also reading the sort of sleep journal science stuff, unless it comes to holidays. But I would have to say, obviously, Matthew Walker's Why We Sleep has been an important one to sort of really get out there, and the importance of sleep. People might not know it necessarily, but Alice Gregory, who's over in London in the UK, she's got a book called Nodding Off, and she certainly consulted a huge array of sleep scientists. And it's really about sleep across the lifespan as well. So it's not just for adults. It's also about developmental changes in sleep, which can be fantastic. So those are great at understanding sleep, a nice foundation. But if you want to help your sleep patterns, you can't go past Overcoming Insomnia by Colin Espy, who's one of the insomnia gurus. It's basically what he does in clinic, he teaches you in that book. So I'd have to say that, if I had to recommend a book for someone experiencing insomnia, I'd say that one. It doesn't necessarily cover if you've got an issue in your circadian rhythm mistiming, if you're falling asleep late, waking up late, or vice versa. So I guess, we need to have a book that does that at some point.
Yes, absolutely. Maybe that's a calling. That sounds great. Well, okay. So one, you've provided, I just got pages of notes out of what you just shared. So I'm sure you've piqued some interest for people. And certainly, attending the upcoming conference or various offerings that will be coming in the future after that. And what are some of the best ways for people to stay aligned and attuned to what you're creating? And it sounds like your aim is to go in deep on this area to make this applicable and accessible for the masses. So this is really an exciting endeavor. So what are some of those ways for people to follow you?
Yeah, I think you're already doing that. You're sort of like leading that sort of way, because The idea is that we have a blog, and, you know, so you can subscribe to our newsletter. We've got over 70 blogs there, and sometimes it's like a topic, sometimes it's like we did this study. So we're trying to get those sort of study findings, what they mean in the real world and what you can do about it to the people. So, you know, that's all freely available. If you do subscribe, sometimes I'll tell you what you can do step by step, which you won't necessarily get if you're just reading the blogs. And if you're more curious about stuff, we've got a download section. So you can actually download some of our actual studies, go to the source. And that's what I'm always trying to profess, is do your own research, get multiple sort of sources, use Google Scholar, etc. So, you know, that's one way to do it. And if you are a health professional as well, you want to get into this area, we're starting to develop our online courses for training. So, you know, for some of the, I'm basically trying to teach you what I think is really the essence, the sort of get rid of all the fluff. These are the core things you need to know in order to be able to help people sleep. So we've got like a brief behavioral therapy for insomnia course that's up there. We've also now developing the cognitive therapy course. We're going to do one for teenagers, so using circadian rhythms, know how to provide bright light therapy and melatonin to change their circadian rhythms. And really, there's also a membership there if people are interested for learning more about it, especially health professionals. Our plan at the moment is to sort of have almost like another membership for people where they can actually go in there and learn about their own sleep and learn about these sort of factual aspects about sleep, these sort of mini videos, and really trying to also tap into providing online programs for people that are going to be able to sort of go, okay, I've got a difficulty falling asleep, go to that program. I've got difficulty waking up during the night, go to that program. So we've got lots of plans available, but just go to winksleep.online, hopefully bookmark it, and hopefully subscribe, and you'll just keep in touch.
That is perfect. Yeah, definitely recommend getting on that newsletter. I've certainly seen some great pieces that you've put out, and excited that there's a real drive behind this to make this something that people can really begin to delve into more, no matter where you're at in your sleep, no matter what you're struggling with, making that available. So appreciate the work you're doing. Thank you so much. Excited to attend your conference, and just thank you so much for taking the time.
And thanks for having me on the show.
You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.